The Gary Knoll Show, daily at noon on the Progressive Radio Network.
Live from New York City, it's The Gary Knoll Show. And now, your host, Gary Knoll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll, and I'd like to welcome you to this program. Today, the latest on why you should think before being pregnant about your mental state. Something I've been suggesting for a long time has now been confirmed. We'll go into that. Then the latest on magnets and what they can do to heal particular cancer. Health and nutrition in depth. Then early on, we're going to go to my Conversations with Remarkable Minds guest. He is Professor Lawrence Lessig. He is director of the Edmund Safra Foundation for Ethics at Harvard University and a professor of law at Harvard Law School. He's also been on the faculty of Stanford University and University of Chicago Law Schools. And he also clerked for the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals and for Justice Scalia on the U.S. Supreme Court. And we're going to talk about how money corrupts Congress and defeats democracy and our denial of systematic failure. Then, our issue of the day, I'm going to take a look at what we're doing that could be a big difference if we took the energy of the Occupy movement and worked with that for specific positive goals. It was Mahatma Gandhi who said you cannot achieve anything simply by being against something. It's important that we're also for something. I'll go into that in depth. That'll be our issue of the day. Let's begin. I once had a conversation with a friend who was going through a lot of issues in life. There'd be a good moment and a lot of bad moments in this person's life. And finally I said, why don't you take some time and do your own retreat, your own spiritual journey? Go someplace and see a different perspective. And that was not to be. Instead, this person went into marriage and had children immediately. And about 2 years later, I received this card, and the card said, I should have listened when you said that if you don't have a life, you have a child. How many times have people who have not had a meaningful, balanced, centered, and spiritual life then went to plan B, have a child, or have many children? Look at the people who have so many children, then they have to have a whole other set of stresses to take care of those children. If you're rich and famous, you can hire nannies, but then what is the purpose of having the child? Because you're not going to have quality time for anyone if you have a whole brood, and you're also busy in a career, and you're trying to save a relationship. Where then does the child fit? And it's just this obsession in our society that somehow the child saves the marriage. We need children, of course, but we should think well before we have them. And I believe that just as we should do a physical detox, we should also do a emotional detox. Because whatever thoughts you have, whatever unresolved issues, however you have locked into an artificial story of yourself, that energy is transferred into the developing fetus. But for a long time, people thought, well, maybe and maybe not. Here's the latest on this. This is in the University of California from a Dr. Davis and Dr. Glenn. Fetuses sense the mom's psychological state. I'll quote this. The fetus growing inside the mother's womb not only hears her heartbeat or the music she might play in her belly or to her belly, but also gets signals from her mental state through the placenta, which affects the baby's development after birth. The researchers also gave their babies tests after they were born to see how well they were developing. They found that what mattered to the babies was if the environment was consistent before and after birth in a positive way. That is, the babies who did best were those who either had mothers who were healthy, both mentally and spiritually, before and after birth, and those mothers who were depressed before or after birth. And what slowed the baby's development was changing conditions. The mother went from being depressed before birth to healthy after, or healthy before or depressed after. Quote, we must admit the strength of this finding surprised us. Yeah? Well, not for a lot of other people, especially those who understand that everything in life is a form of energy. And the thought that creates the energy then can create a physical dynamic. Your thoughts can actually shape the function of DNA. So just imagine what it does in a relationship. Think of how many people, long before they say goodbye, have detached from what was essential or meaningful in a relationship, either at work or family or friends or an intimate relationship. And sometimes it can take years before a person finally says enough. But long before that word enough, it's already tipped. That's the emotion. Assault someone's senses, demean them, degrade them, try to embarrass them, try to make them feel bad about themselves. And you've just permanently cut a line, an energy. No matter what you say or do after that is really insignificant. It's so easy to be abusive. And then, when you realize what you may have lost, then to apologize. But that's not an apology that comes from any spiritual place. It's one of fear of abandonment, even from that which you were abusive to. We just don't get it, do we? Be nice all the time, or don't be at all. I'm one of those people who believes, and I've seen it in my own experiences in life, that working on a bad relationship never made it good. It just made you better able to understand what went wrong, but it doesn't change it. It's the energy that changes a relationship. And when that has been assaulted, abused, watch how quickly that energy cuts. And once an energy is not there, nothing else is that's important. So just remember, before you have that child, both the mother and father, understand, are you emotionally and spiritually in a really good place? And are you going to pay attention to what the baby's needs are before your own? Because if all you do is carry on, in spite of what's growing in your body, what's growing in your body is a part of you. That's the epigenetics. And therefore, do you want another you in this world? Ask yourself that. Based upon some of the people I've met, no. The answer is unequivocally no. On to the next, magnets. Magnets do a lot of good. And according to this latest study, magnets help people fight prostate cancer. And unlike chemotherapy and radiation, the treatment can kill cancer cells without harming healthy cells. Researchers at the University of Sheffield in England said it is effective for most advanced forms of disease. Prostate cancer is the most common form of cancer in men. There are about 37,000 new cases a year, 10,000 deaths. When prostate cancer develops, some of the white blood cells, called macrophages, flock to tumors to try to fight them. However, because these tumors grow and spread so rapidly, the blood cells are able to keep pace. To speed up their action, the researchers have injected cells with magnetically charged nanoparticles. Each one is 1/50th the width of a human hair. This magnetic force enables the cells to move much more quickly around the body's targeted tumors. And early lab tests have shown that the white blood cells can reduce numbers of cancer cells. So, something important. I also believe in fixed magnets. Sleeping on a magnetic mattress, magnetic headrest also repulsates and helps create a more balanced polarity of the cell. For those who study the actual, real, independent scientific literature, there is no controversy about the danger of cell phones. For those who want to believe that they're healthy, and therefore the real science is immaterial, then they'll look at an industry-funded study that you know the results are going to be skewed to show no harm. This is the latest from Bristol University, Professor Dennis Henshaw. Cell phones could be a health time bomb. Experts have warned that mobile phones can cause serious health and in the near future, And, quote, vast numbers of people are using mobile phones, and they could be in a time bomb for health problems, not just brain tumors, but also fertility, which would be a serious public health issue. Now, according to the scientists, there are more than 200 academic studies that link the use of the device cell phones with serious health complications, including brain tumors. A recent Swedish study suggested children who use mobile phones are 500% more likely to develop a rare brain tumor called glioma. In their report submitted to a leading British scientific group states, quote, both the government and the phone companies could very easily do far more to alert the public, particularly children, to the emerging risks and safety measures. But they're not. They'll continue to deny it, and those people who don't want to look at the truth will continue to use their cell phones as if there's no problem. There is. Now, something that can benefit all of us are eating more nuts. According to Science Daily, a major study in a peer-reviewed journal, the American Cancer Society's Journal of Proteome Research, shows that nuts help with lowering blood pressure, help with lowering blood sugar, and for the first time, scientists report a link between eating nuts and higher levels of serotonin in the bodies of patients with metabolic syndrome who are at high risk of heart disease. Now, I know that you know that serotonin is a substance that helps transmit nerve signals, and these signals help decrease the feelings of hunger. It makes people feel happier, and you improve your heart health. It took only 1 ounce. That's 1 ounce. That's like one teaspoon of mixed nuts, raw unpeeled walnuts, almonds, hazelnuts, a day to produce good effects. Christine Lucivia and colleagues at the Biomarkers and Nutrient Metabolics Research Group at the University of Barcelona, collaboration with the Human Nutrition Unit at the University of Spain, work together on this. So, for those of you who have been eating your raw nut butters or just eating nuts, raw nuts, keep doing it. You're helping yourself feel better, protecting your heart, creating a better serotonin balance in the body. And finally, depression and chronic stress both accelerate aging, according to the peer-reviewed journal Biological Psychiatry, as published in Science Daily. People with recent depressions or those exposed to chronic stress exhibit shorter telomeres in the white blood cells. And the telomere is the outermost part of chromosomes. Now, as we age, telomeres shorten, and studies have shown that oxidative stress and inflammation accelerate this shortening. On this basis, it's been suggested telomere length is a measure of biological aging, and telomere length has subsequently been linked to age-related diseases and unhealthy lifestyles and longevity. And the research team shows the shorter the telomere length is associated with both recurrent depression and cortisol levels indicative of exposure to chronic stress. So, this is important to pay attention to the type of stress we're under, and if it's chronic or acute, and to deal with it. Otherwise, we end up hurting ourselves. This was a collaborative effort between the Department of Medical Biosciences, Umeå University, as well as scientists at Stockholm University, and Linköping University, and Antwerp Universities. I'm Gary Noll, back in a moment with our guest. Please stay with us.
You
I'd like to welcome all of you. At least one half of the audience listening are listening from around the world outside the United States, and we welcome you. This is our Conversations with Remarkable Minds segment of our program. My guest, as I gave his introduction at the beginning of the program, is on now, and he'll be talking to us on Skype, so it won't be quite the same technical quality as we're used to. And he is Professor Lawrence Lessig, and he is director of the Edmund Safra Foundation for Ethics at Harvard University and a professor of law at Harvard Law School. And he is the author of many papers on different topics involving this subject, and including a book called Republic Lost, How Money Corrupts Congress, and a Plan to Stop It. Nice to have you with us today.
Great to be here.
At the end of last month, a polling survey has placed Congress's approval rating at an all-time low of 9%. What wonders who the 9% who believe Congress is functional and constructive really are, since we know who comprise the other 91%. So I'd like, if you would please, to begin by reviewing your analysis of the systematic manipulation of rules, laws that go into making our country. Who's behind this? The dysfunction, intrinsic, almost institutionalized within our political system, that the vast majority of Americans are now deeming as corrupt. And by the way, this is from all sides. This is not uniquely one side or the other. And one last issue that I will raise, my concern is that we do not in this country have honest, open, important dialogues on the role of lobbyists to the 435 members of the House, 100 members of the Senate, 14,000 registered lobbyists, $6.7 billion that they have spent recently. And the latest study is that for every dollar that a lobbyist sees that a legislator receives, the organizations or companies involved behind that lobbying receives up to $100 in special services or benefits in return. And then I have a whole list of the insurance companies' money and pharmaceutical money and how the lobbyists actually write bills and laws. Most people are unaware of this. And what role does lobbying, the power of the lobbyists, the organizations behind the lobbyists play in actually seeing how our government functions? The floor is yours, sir.
So I think that the thing to first recognize is that when one talks about corruption here, it's not corruption in the old-fashioned sense of the term. It's not bribery. It's not Rob Blagojevich behavior. It's not anything that crosses a criminal statute. Instead, what this kind of corruption is the corruption that follows from an institution that spends such an enormous amount of time focused on the question of raising money to fund their elections or to get their party back in power. So these are not criminals, these are decent people just living in a system that forces them to spend between 30 and 70% of their time raising money inside the system. And as they do that, they, as any of us would, become attuned to, they develop a sixth sense about how what they do might affect their ability to raise money. And so they constantly direct themselves, at least part of their head, always focused on this question of what's it going to take to raise money. And as they do that, they distort what they work on. They distort at least some of the decisions they make as members of Congress. Now, lobbyists are a central part of this, no doubt. Although I think even in utopia, we would still have lobbyists in Congress, as policy wonks that explain to Congress what Congress's activities do to the world. The problem with lobbyists today is, you know, as John Edwards used to say when we used to quote John Edwards, there's all the difference in the world between a lawyer making an argument to a jury and a lawyer handing out $100 bills to the jurors. And the system we've got right now doesn't distinguish between the two. So lobbyists are both at the center of policy information for Congress, which is a good thing, but they're also at the center of channeling money into the political system, which makes them much more powerful in their policy advice than their ideas alone would suggest. So that's why, you see such an enormous amount of money spent on lobbying because the return is extremely high, and that number is only growing as Congress is ever more addicted to this need to raise money.
Many of our listeners here are very proactive in health and environmental issues, particularly regarding private interests that influence policies that threaten people's health, such as genetically modified foods, our energy policies promoting nonsense like clean coal or more nuclear reactors or hydrofracking for gas, and also the industrial food complex that is contributing to the rise of adult diabetes in children and our obesity epidemic. There's also the lack of accountability in the higher executive turrets of the pharmaceutical industry that push bad science and manipulate medical journals with ghostwritten studies in order to streamline drugs into the market, on top of our federal health agencies not having a responsible regulatory review process in place to assure the protection of patients from the adverse effects of many drugs. And many serious adverse effects that were hidden from the FDA reviewers. And Big Pharma is one of the largest lobbies in Washington. So could you give us an idea of what it means when there is such a disproportionate amount of power and influence on one side of the ledger, and the American public trusting that whatever their agencies or representatives are telling them or offering them is safe and effective, when frequently that is not the case, and there seems to be no downside to the corporations that make mistakes as long as they can write a check and go forward?
Yeah, I think there are two separate issues here. One is, how are we going to perceive a statement by a government regulator or a statement by a company that their product is safe? And the second question is, how does the money actually affect whether their product is safe? And I think that, you know, we often don't put those two questions together. Often, you know, for example, a congressman will say, the money hasn't affected my decision, or corporations will say, the fact that this research was funded by the corporation didn't affect its outcome. But the legitimate question isn't just whether, in fact, it has affected anything. It's whether the perception that money has driven the result is going to significantly affect whether people trust the company or trust the particular result. And what I do in my book is we have some interesting psychological research which is trying to demonstrate how these two questions always run together. And an institution like Congress certainly needs to worry about the perception as much as they need to worry about, in fact, the reality, because the perception itself can do harm. You know, so if people believe that money buys results in Congress, which according to the poll that I ran conducted for my book, 75% of Americans would say money buys results in Congress. If that's what people believe, then they're going to become much less engaged in actually trying to affect what Congress does, because why would you be engaged if you know that, in fact, it's not your engagement that's going to determine anything? It's going to be the money of very large, powerful interests here. So I think that the legitimate question is, what do we have to do to build a government that we could trust so that we have a reason to get involved and get it to do the things we want it to do, whether that's stuff on the progressive side of the line or stuff on the conservative side of the line? I think both sides suffer because of this existing system of corruption. And much more fundamentally, I think that one of the frustrating things about this fight is that we have all sorts of people who are extremely active in their own particular issue. So people are very active about global warming, and, you know, I share the view that that's one of the most important issues for us to solve, and people very active about healthcare, people active about food safety, people active about worker safety. All of these issues you can get exercised about and excited about because you can see the direct impact and harm that it does inside of our society or to particular people. But unless we can discipline ourselves enough to step back and recognize that all of these issues are being affected by a more fundamental issue, we're never going to make progress on any of these issues. My sacred text in the book is Thoreau's passage in On Walden, where he writes, "For every thousand hacking at the branches of evil, there's one striking at the root." And I think that's kind of the point here. We got to recognize that all of these separate branches of evil have a common root, and unless we find a way to motivate people to attack that common root, we're never going to make progress on any of these other extremely important issues that draw us into politics in the first place.
I appreciate that answer. Thank you. Why not do something that is just fundamentally simple? And that is take all money, all private money, corporate money out of campaigning and have only the government sponsor a three-month campaign, allow people to write their position, their background, their bios on all the relevant issues that would be addressed in a campaign. Let the public then review this information and then by lottery select people who would then be given open questions from people in the audience over the internet and other forms, and then select groups who would debate each other, have it on a relatively quick basis, and therefore the least wealthy amongst us could run for any office along with the wealthiest, and you would literally ban this kind of lobbying and this kind of money and get back to something representing a people's democracy. Your thoughts on this, please.
Well, I do think that we need some pretty important and fundamental reforms. Although I guess I have to confess to being a small C conservative in the sense that I want to make the fewest changes necessary, the fewest restrictions, fewest deep alterations necessary to get us back to a democracy that we could trust. So long before you basically shut down all campaigning around campaigns is the way we see it right now, we could make changes that I think get us to a place where we have a reason to trust our system. So, if I could write an amendment tomorrow that would address what I think of as the core problems here, that amendment would have three parts. The first part would be a mandate for publicly funding public elections. And I can describe the particular form of funding in a second, but that's the first thing. We've got to have public funding of elections. The second thing is, I think that people contributing something in an election is a good thing because it gets them committed and interested and want to be participating in it. But we just have to make sure that the contributions don't become so significant that people wonder whether it's the contributions or the principles, the ideas that's driving a result. So I would say we should limit contributions to no more than $100 a citizen. And then number three, I think Congress has got to have the power to limit, but not necessarily to ban, independent political expenditures, not inside of a campaign, but outside of a campaign, so that anybody can make their views known, but nobody can be so dominant in the election that we believe that candidates are shape-shifting not just to raise money, but also to satisfy the independent expenditures. Now, the critical part about that mix is what's the public funding mechanism look like? So I think that we've seen lots of public funding where basically the government comes in and says, okay, you're going to get $1 million to run your race, or you're going to get, or we're going to give everybody $100,000 to run their race. And I think that the resistance people have to systems like that is it feels arbitrary and a little bit scary that the government itself would be deciding how much people get to challenge the government. If the government said everybody gets $1,000, that would be a pretty effective incumbent protection act. And so I think we need a way to make sure that the government can't just protect itself against challengers. And so I would say that, one simple way to do this would be to say every voter contributes at least $50 to the federal treasury. So let's say that we rebate that first $50 in the form of a democracy voucher. Let people use that voucher to support any congressional candidate, as long as that candidate is only going to take those vouchers, and under the amendment I said, was only get $100 from any citizen. Now, if you did that, that would be about $6 billion in the election cycle, which is about 2.5 times the total amount raised and spent in the last election. That $6 billion would fund campaigns in a way that nobody could imagine something that was big money contributions were driving results. Everybody would think that whatever reason Congress did something stupid, it was not because of the money. And I think that would establish the conditions under which we could begin to have faith that it wasn't the corrupting influence that was driving a particular result, but the sort of influence that there's a reason to motivate democratic action to respond to. So those are much smaller changes than what you were describing, but I think that gets us pretty close to a kind of election that we could have some faith in, and that's ultimately, I think, the objective we've got to focus on right now in a world where, as you said before, 9% of America has confidence in this institution.
All right. Did you see 60 Minutes this past Sunday evening?
I heard about it, and okay. I'm in the middle of his book. So,
all right. Jack Abramoff is one of the more significant lobbyists in Washington's history, and at this moment, one of its most blaringly honest. He's coming full force to do a mea culpa, but not just about himself, but about everything in the system. And what he said, and he was unequivocal in this, is that no matter what law you pass, what reform bill you have, the lobbyists already are in place to make sure that they find a way through it. My concern when you have any form of reform is that those who write the rules could have met with the people from, let's say, at the state or federal level, from ALEC Group, representing select, very powerful corporations, or the lobbyists behind the scenes who aren't registered as lobbyists, but are in fact acting, but are rather acting as strategic consultants, maybe from the military or one of the other complexes, who walk in. They've been there before. They were frequently senators or congresspersons who are staying behind in Washington. The payout for them is tremendous, and they give the appearance that something will work. But in the end, nothing fundamentally changes. I just believe that many of us, myself included, no longer believe in the reform that we have historically said would make a difference. When we see with the Dodd Act and the Dodd-Frank Act, they can waltz right around all these things. So on that one, you and I would share different perspective, and that's fine. My final question for you is this. Many independent economists, such as Simon Johnson at MIT, of course, and Joseph Stiglitz, the Nobel Prize winner, and James Galbraith, Robert Auerbach, Rubini, Michael Hudson, are arguing that a dramatic systemic change and new regulatory mechanisms needs to be put in place, and new regulations on Wall Street in order to protect citizens and to prevent another economic collapse. Yet none of these voices are being listened to, and fundamentally nothing has changed to reform the system. How do you explain this, and what role has private money played in keeping our crippled financial system in place and protected by our elected officials on both sides of the aisle?
Yeah, I think Wall Street or financial reform is the most glaring example of the corrupting influence of money inside our system. You know, it's one thing to say that Congress, when Congress basically bought deregulation before 2008, that was wrong. It certainly was wrong, I think, but it was a little bit understandable in a world where basically, the zeitgeist was deregulation, and all sides were telling Congress, economists from both sides of the aisle were telling Congress that deregulation made sense. Of course, those economists didn't reveal that they themselves had been paid by the banks that were going to benefit from deregulation, but put that aside, it was kind of understandable. The really striking thing is after 2008, after we have the biggest crisis since the Depression, after all people like Simon Johnson and people even on the right, Richard Posner, in two of his books that he wrote about the financial collapse, conclude that part of the reason for the collapse, maybe the majority of the reason, was the misregulation of Wall Street because of the way Wall Street had basically bought regulation that set them outside of traditional financial rules. After the dean of deregulation, Alan Greenspan, confessed that he was mistaken in believing the banks would act in the public interest as opposed to their private interest. After all of that, Wall Street still had the ability to blackmail both the Democrats and the Republicans into passing, quote, reform, which doesn't change any of the basic conditions that led to the collapse. Now, you know, it's a little terrifying to see that after such a dramatic catastrophe, you still have the power to basically control and stop any type of reform. And that's directly, I think, because of the kind of influence of money inside the system. Now, nobody can know whether, you know, once you remove money from the system or remove the corrupting influence of money from the system's going to work. My own view is that, you know, we should try. That's the first step. And imagine a world where Congress people weren't so beholden to this special interest money and see if they can actually do the right thing. You know, I think if you look back to 1994, that when Congress was considering, the question of deregulating derivatives, one of the strongest opponents to deregulation on the House Banking Committee was a Republican, Jim Leach from Iowa. And you say, so why was this Republican so strongly opposed to deregulation? Jim Leach was the only person sitting on the House Banking Committee at the time who didn't take PAC money. So he was the only one who was independent enough to make a judgment about whether deregulation made sense. And I think that, you know, that independence allowed him to come to a conclusion that turns out, in retrospect, made a lot of sense. And I think that if we achieve that kind of independence generally, we might be able to build a Congress that could begin to make the right type of judgments about a set of these issues, and in particular, those affecting Wall Street, which right now are completely corrupted by the largest chunk of contributions coming into congressional campaigns from the Wall Street banks.
I appreciate these insights you share with us, and all the best on your new book. It's certainly an important read.
Thank you.
My guest, Professor Lawrence Lessig, Lessig. I'm Gary Nall. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. What's going on? We have a lot of program left, and I'm going to be going to our issue in the moment, and then the latest on environmental issues, some very important stuff. Greenhouse gases are on the rise by record amounts, and nothing being done about it. We'll talk about that. And we're going to go in studio and say hello to Richard Gale and John Q and Jason in a moment. Just one quick moment we'll take aside for our special. And remember, this special allows no one else on the air to raise funds. Now think of that. WBAI just finished 4 weeks of nonstop fundraising and repeating programs ad nauseum. I even pleaded with him in letter and on the phone, please stop repeating programs. But unfortunately, but understandably, it was raising them funds they needed in order to pay bills. Well, we don't do that. On Progressive Radio Network, I'm the only person that ever takes time out, generally once every 8 days for about 8 minutes, to raise funds. But it's enough to fund the whole network. I think that's a model that BAI and other stations should use. I've shared that with them. And so you've never heard in 7.5 years a single person raise money. And you won't. And here's why. Because we offer you things that are good and healthy and special. Now today, something that has been out of stock for a long time, and one of the reasons that we've been out of stock on certain products is because our manufacturing plant moved from New Jersey to another location in New Jersey, and it took them far longer than what they thought, and as a result we ran out. One of the things we ran out of is one of our most popular products, Friendly Fiber. Now, we know the role of fiber in the diet, and we know that if you really care about your health, you're going to have lots of good fiber, but most people don't. And then the fiber they have is only one type. I believe in mixed fibers. I believe that the fibers found in the walls of the plant cell can be the digestive enzymes in the human digestive tract, enhancing that digestion. And so what I've done is I put together this combination of different fibers. I put together fibers such as flaxseed, psyllium, rice, apple, lecithin, oat bran, rice bran, carrot, grapefruit, orange, pineapple, lemon, lime, cherry, watermelon, pear, mango, strawberry, papaya, tangerine, apricot, cranberry, guar, Jerusalem artichoke, vitamin C, ginger root, fennel seed, anise, and cinnamon. Now, there's no sugar, corn, starch, honey, lactose, milk, dairy. It's strictly vegan. It is a phenomenal product and gives you 13 high-quality grams of fiber per serving. So, this is the ultimate fiber product. There's nothing like it out there. Here's the deal. Today, purchase one, and you get the second one free. Plus, you're getting a very important documentary, Detoxification, A Natural Approach. All the best experts in America talking about why we become toxic, how we become toxic, and how to detoxify in a natural, soothing, easy manner. That's $40 free. In fact, you would normally pay $111.37. Today, you're only paying $34.95. How much did you save? $76.42 savings today. You're saving $76.42. You're only paying $34 for all that, two jars of Friendly Fiber and the Detox Natural Approach DVD. Call the following number. And again, this is only while supplies last. Unfortunately, they only gave us 500 cans. And so that'll go quickly. 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. Or you can drop by our vitamin closet at 92nd and 2nd. Say hello to Harry. He'll read you a poem. And go by 83rd and Broadway, where Neil's there. And you can pick it up or call. It'll be sent out today. 877-627-5065 for Friendly Fiber. You're saving $76. Now, separately, this coming weekend, I'm on the road, but I'm going to take anywhere from an hour and a half to 2 hours to have an in-depth discussion for those people only who are interested in being a part of the homesteading project I'm doing, because I'm now closing in very shortly on the final purchase of a major piece of property in America, where I'm going to be setting up a food village, an arts village, a healing village. Is really unique concepts. And people who are interested, it's by invitation, and it takes mastery of your skill. In other words, you can't just show up at some point in the future and say, I'm here. Long before that, like the Ortegas and others, you have to master what you're going to do, show that it'll work. I'm just going to help you in that process, show you what's involved and how those of you who wish to change the future in your life in a more positive way to get out into a more holistic environment can do so. If you want to be a part of that, right now I don't even know whether it's Saturday or Sunday. Someone in my office, it's Sunday at 1 Eastern Standard Time. Call this number and you can let them know, because there's a limit how many people can actually sit there. Call this number if you intend to come. 646-926-5428. 646-926-5428. It's Jason. Now, here's our issue of the day. Then we're going to ask you to call in. Then we'll take your calls. And in the interim, we're going to be talking with the people in the studio about some upcoming programs. I believe that we are at a very important moment. I believe that we will see a tripling or quadrupling of the Occupy movement, mainly from young people who are awakening, mainly involving communications with other young people because of the world that they live in. Student loans that are impossible to repay for most, jobs that are not existent, and then getting an idea that there's a disparity between the people who have and people who have not. Hence this notion of 1% and 99%. As long as people show up and show up with a temperament that they're not going to take it anymore, that's a very positive thing. And we've been supportive, providing food and insight and a radio forum on Progressive Radio Network before anyone else did. And but I also believe that we should step back and ask ourselves two questions. One is, being angry at people who have cheated us, manipulated us, and lied to us does not in itself solve a problem. Camping out shouldn't be the issue. Whether or not we're going to be rained on, snowed on, or have food, or get maced by the police is not the issue. That's merely the unintended consequences. What is important is, what are we for? And if you're not for something that the average American can also identify with, then you won't get their support. And if you don't get their support when the news cycle changes, this bubble will deflate very quickly. So therefore, what we at Progressive Radio Network are doing, and all the scholars in residence, the activists in residence, we have come up with a list of things to be for that you can put your energy behind that help everyone. They are inclusive. For example, stopping nuclear, but then promoting the massive use of solar and wind and geothermal, and also wave power. Any one of those is enough to power the entire electric grid in the United States. So we're against nuclear. Good. Let's put that energy and anger in a constructive way to close it all down. 104 plants and another 200 facilities like Oak Ridge in Lawrence Livermore. But then also we're for something that takes its place. Then we have vaccines. We're against mandatory vaccines. Voluntary, it's your business. You have a right to that. But we're against bad science. So therefore, we believe that we, the American public, should demand a true independent study. It has never been done, where you take, let's say, 1,000 children who've never been vaccinated, compare them, cross-match them with 1,000 who have, and then follow them for 4 or 5 years on a quarterly basis to see who comes down with which conditions at what level, and that way you'll know whether or not the antibody stimulation in a vaccine is actually producing immunity. There is no proof of that in any single group at this moment. And so that's something to be against bad science and something to be for natural immunity and building immune systems. And thirdly, we're against hydrofracking for gas. And Richard Gale is going to tell us a big special coming up Monday evening on that. So joining forces to stop hydrofracking and then show what we can put in its place. Again, natural alternative resources. And food irradiation we're against. Genetic engineering we're against. That means we're for organic sustainable gardening. And then supporting homesteaders in each state and giving them some free land, providing that 25% of what they grow, they give back to the state and to charities and food banks, but then allow them, if they stay there and work that land organically, that they, in effect, are getting their land over a period of time by what they contribute back. Think of all the people who are homeless, or think of the people who would like to make a change in their life, who would love that opportunity. So we have about 20 different areas of what could make major changes in a good way and stop something that's bad. Progressive Radio Network will be putting all this up on our website. We already have films and articles. And I believe that if we're going to really see a sustaining, then also we have to stop the idea that there's 1% of the American public who are all greedy and all bad and causing all of our problems. 99% are innocent and just good people. It's not true. It isn't true. You have good people among the most powerful and wealthy, and you have bad people amongst the poorest amongst us at all levels. So this kind of gross oversimplification, when it's finally held up to scrutiny, will be pulverized. We have to be far more critical in the judgments that come out of any of the hoorah movements, and we have to be reasonable. I believe that if the Tea Party, the original Ron Paul Tea Party, ever met with the really introspective Occupy people, they couldn't imagine how much they actually would have in common. This divisiveness is counterproductive. And also, just as an example, why is it that we'll be against a person on Wall Street taking home a big budget, a big paycheck, and not think twice about going to a James Cameron avatar where we end up paying $15 or $20 and he makes $500 million in 1 year, or Johnny Depp makes $45 million in a year, or Tom Cruise, or a rap singer makes $50 million in a year, or Oprah Winfrey makes money. These are massive amounts of money, far more than what is a person's needs, but their right to make it, and it costs. That money didn't come from people donating it. It cost because they were able to market themselves. So if we're concerned about the disproportionate advantage of those who can market themselves and profit from it versus those who make money off money, why shouldn't we also occupy Oprah, occupy Kim Kardashian, and all, or whatever her name is, that fat-ass person? What, Kardashian, you know, her whole life is just one big, giant, manipulative ego trip. I mean, anybody should have seen that coming. Why don't we occupy Johnny Depp's, stupid brain? Because they have a right to that. So before we get too tied up in looking at one group, why don't we look at everybody? If you're against corporate America, are you against McDonald's? Are you against Coca-Cola, Pepsi-Cola? Are you against Nikes? Are you against the people that make your clothes, the designer clothes where slave labor is made? If you can't be that introspective, then it's a very hollow movement. And there's historical movements where people were not hollow. They were very well grounded, very informed, and very proactive. I believe there has to be a lot more circumspection in this movement. Otherwise, it's just a movement on steroids, and sooner or later, it will lose traction. Let's go into our studio now, and that's my comment. I'd like to hear from you. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Richard Gale. Hi, Richard.
Hi, Gary. Just a quick announcement here, and this is going to be for the Progressive Commentary Hour that you'll be hosting this Monday. That's November 14th at 7 p.m., and this is where we don't have any news commentaries at all. We just really dive into an issue, and we're going to be taking on the hydrofracking environmental dangers that are going to be coming up to a legislative vote, at least I think in New York City, on November 21st. So we want to be able to educate listeners on that. For the program, we have a Gwen Lechelt. She's the director of the Oil and Gas Accountability Project for Earthworks. They're a major D.C. environmental watchdog group that has focused a lot on shale drilling for natural gas. There's Craig Michaels. He's the chief attorney for the National Resources Defense Council, who are heavily involved in various litigations with some of the fracking companies. David Braun, who has been a guest on the program before, the co-founder of the nonprofit organization United for Action. And all going well, there will be Professor Tony Ingraffia. He's the Cornell University fracking group. So he could be able to provide some of the science. So that's going to be on this Monday, November 14th, 7 p.m., during your Progressive Commentary Hour. And just one more announcement, just a guest announcement for Monday's noon show. I'm holding in my hand a book called Vulture's Picnic, In Pursuit of Petroleum Pigs, Power Pirates, and High Finance Carnivores. And this is going to come out on Monday. It'll be in the bookstores, and it's our friend Greg Palace. So Greg will be returning as a guest, and I think this is by far the most fascinating read of Greg Palace I've ever seen, right. Which only Greg can do. So this is going to be a very, very lively show going all around the world to capture the vultures that are just raping the system.
Well, let's hope the people also realize Sunday evening, 8 p.m.
Or 7 p.m.
No, Sunday evening, 8 p.m. is our health and nutrition hour only, and Monday, 7 p.m., Monday evening, 7 p.m., the Progressive Commentary Hour. Let's go over and say hello. Thank you. Let's go over and say hello to Jason. Hi, Jason.
Hi, good afternoon, Gary. I just had three quick things I wanted to say. Once again, Sunday at 1 p.m. at the East 92nd location, you'll be calling in and going over a sustainable living. And if people still would like to join us, we have a few spots open. You could please call me at 646-926-5428, then hopefully you can get one of the last few spots available. My second thing was something I reiterated yesterday about our Google Plus site now, which all you have to do is go to Google Plus and go to Progressive Radio Network, and you'll find us. In the last 3 days, we've grown over with 6,000 people. If you join us there, we have some great conversations, we have some great videos, we have some great postings of articles on all our different subjects, from vaccines to GMOs to hydrofracking. So please join us over there now, because it's definitely something that we're trying to push and get all our fans to join together, so we can all be as one. And then lastly, Gary, we have these great new sites that we're talking about. We're trying to open different things with vaccines, GMOs, hydrofracking. So we're looking for college campuses, people that are on college campus throughout the United States of America, to come and please give me a call or email so that they can help us spread the word of the Progressive Radio Network and let people know what great shows we have, what great articles we have, what great news we give to people. So if there are people out there on college's campus that would love to help us, we would really appreciate it. So if you can call me, once again, my number is 646-926-5428, or you can go on our website and find my email address there as well. So please help us spread the word so we can keep moving forward.
Let me give you an example. Currently, at least three different countries around the world, activists in those countries have asked for either death by medicine or knocking on the devil's door, our deadly nuclear legacy, and showing it. If you're on a college campus and you get a copy of the film, and we'll give it to you for free, and you arrange to have it shown privately or in a dorm or however you can, and then have a discussion afterwards, we would provide you with a list of all the articles and experts. who can back up all this, then that starts people into an awareness mode. Where gee whiz, I wasn't aware that we're only 41 miles from this college campus at Rutgers to Indian Point. I didn't know that if that ever exploded, this is what would happen. Once younger people are made aware of what they have not been told, they can quickly become proactive and then make a movement on that campus to close down the nuclear power plant closest to them, whatever it is. We will provide the articles. Whatever the social issue is that's important, we can provide that information. Like why should students not get the flu vaccine that's being promoted on all the college campuses this year? Mm-hmm. Well, this coming Monday, I will be doing a report on, as part four of a five-part report, on the dangers of vaccines based upon what's in the vaccines. Okay. This is an original in-depth investigation. If you knew, as a college student, what was going into your body, you would never take it. You just wouldn't. So we believe that the next frontier is to get colleges and people in the college system aware of issues that more often than not they are not, and they're not up to date on. But we are, and we have all the documentaries from ourselves and other people and the activist groups and articles, enough information to empower them. And that's how grassroots activism starts. Quality information on a variety of topics. Take the one that most interests you, and we're here to help you. So give Jason a call, and he'll help you out and give you what you need. Now, John Q's here, and I'm waiting on calls. I'm not in the best position to know what calls I have, so I'm going to ask my engineer to take the calls that are coming in at 888-874-4888 on this concept that we should expand the notion of being for something, not just against something, and that the occupy is more than occupying a little tiny bit of land in a community and then being defiant against the police. That overly narrowifies the argument, and that won't win anything. It won't change anything. It'll just draw attention to itself. We need something more than that. We need to be proactive in changing so everyone benefits by something constructive changing. As you heard, I just had this one of the most renowned professors of law in the United States from Harvard University. He and I hold different points of view. I don't believe in reform, because the moment you have reform, the lobbyists are going to control the outcome. They have on every single piece of legislation. I believe simply change it. Not a single penny from any source except the government can go into an election and then a three-month cycle. I also believe we should ban completely all lobbyists. No lobbyists for any organization. Make it a federal crime. You cannot contact a legislator unless you're just an individual citizen and who wants to address something with their legislator. Yes, that's what they're for. No other group and no one representing a group can do that. Well, if you get rid of the lobbyist and you get rid of the campaign money, then you've just broken the power of corporate America or special interest groups to control and write legislation. And then it becomes truly populist. John Q, we only have a minute to go. Danny Schechter shows following ours. We're looking forward to that.
Okay.
John Q, first of all, congratulations to you and all the other Natural Living Running and Walking Club members for doing this year's New York City Marathon. Could you give us a few names of those who did
it? Sure can, Gary. Manny, Bradley, Carlos, Audrey, Roberto, Robert, Joe, Kadir, Michelle, Diane, and myself, and a couple of others I can't come offhand. We all finished. Everyone medaled. Okay. We want to thank all the volunteers that handed out green stuff to our people coming back and forth through there. Nesha for energy work for those that were feeling a little bad after the marathon. And I want to let everyone that ran the marathon know that on Sunday at 8:30 a.m., at 5th Avenue 90th Street, we're going to do our photo shoot. And everybody bring their medals, and we're going to do a lap around the park. And we want to thank you, Gary, for making all of this possible and making all of us aware of this so that we can do this each year.
Well, absolutely. Next year I will be doing it. No matter what, I will not put any of these filming schedules in my way. I will be doing the New York City Marathon with you next year. Thank you.
Right.
We're out of time for this weekend, Sunday at 1. Wherever I'm at, I will take time to share insights in what I believe are necessary skills and the way to develop these skills from scratch so that your future, if you choose to do something in homesteading, you'll be able to do that. And for everyone else, Sunday evening, 8 o'clock, right here on Progressive Radio Network. Now, Danny Schechter, the News Dissector, coming right at you.
There's something on my mind. Won't somebody please, please tell me what's wrong?
The Gary Null Show is produced in our New York City studios. The producer is Richard Gale. The engineer is Matthew Bogart. All shows are archived by Kyle Pollard. Our chief archivist is Sharon Pride. And the program director is Jason Tappenfeld.